You're listening to Bluegrass Bios here on 93.9 WLXU LPFM, Lexington Community Radio, coming to you live up here on the north side of Lexington, Kentucky, on 6th Street in the beautiful 100-plus-year-old Johnson Elementary, now known as the Steam Academy. And it's a little steamy in here.
It is.
But that's not why they call it that. But anyways, I'm Chuck.
I'm Ben.
And with us is a special guest in the studio. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Yes. Hi, I'm Rich Greisman.
Excellent. And thank you very much for coming in, Rich. We really appreciate it. And, you know, so just in case for folks don't know, Rich Greisman is the founder of Double Take Photography. Can you explain to people a little bit about Double Take? And
sure. Let me talk about the name. There was a Robert Cole. There we go. I know I get it. So Robert Cole was a very storied psychiatrist, was at Harvard, did work that was really groundbreaking in terms of understanding the life of a child from a child's point of view, in particular lives filled with violence. And he had this secret passion for photography that came out in retirement. And he's one of those people who is an 80-something-year-old, decided to start his third or fourth career. Mm. And he started a magazine called Double Take Photography, which was this fabulous... just Double Take, a magazine that was both essays, it was kind of photo essays, in that it was writing and photography. In some ways, homage to that wonderful book, Let Us Now Praise Famous Men, the Walker Evans, James Agee book on Appalachia. And it was... it had a nice ride. It was probably 10 or 15 years, and then it dissolved. He was probably more inspirational than he was financially clever, and it ran into financial troubles. But I loved it, and when I thought about starting my own photography business, Double Take seemed like the way to do it, in part as an homage to him and his work, but also because one of my early and most favorite photographs is of two cows in a pond. Mm-hmm. I caught them at the intersection just as they were crossing each other. So it looks like a cow with either two heads or two rear ends, depending on how you look at it. And one cow was looking at me, giving me a double take because I'm pointing something at him. Mm. The thing I'm pointing is a camera. So it seemed like a perfect way to name a business.
That's awesome. I love that. It's so reflexive.
Yeah.
Certainly. And so, Rich, you're here as part of our May fundraiser that we have. Have Your Say in May. So basically, we are trying to raise money for Lexington Community Radio.
Good cost.
So if you'd like to call in and make a pledge or a request, feel free to do so. The number is 859-721-5690. Or you can go to our website, lexingtoncommunityradio.org, and do that as well. So, Rich, the first question I have for you is, where were you born?
Okay.
Wow. We'll start right at the beginning.
Tough question. Yeah. And I'll probably blank on that too. I am a Brooklyn, New York guy, born at Maimonides Hospital in Brooklyn, New York. Lived there for 6 years. Went through the first half of kindergarten at a public school in Brooklyn. Avenue U at 36th Street was my home. And then my folks moved to Westchester County, Lower Westchester County, what was then called the country. Mm. My dad was a World War II vet, and he had GI money, and in 1957 bought a home in Lower Westchester.
Cool. The American dream.
Oh, yes. Absolutely.
Nice. Yep. And where did you go to school?
So I was a product of the Ardsley schools. Ardsley was a... little village near where I lived. I actually grew up in Hartsdale after we moved out of Brooklyn. Mm-hmm. I went to Ardsley Elementary School called the Concord Road School, and then Ardsley Middle School, and graduated from Ardsley High School, home of the Panthers.
Ferocious and, mascot.
Yes, and if you really push me, I will sing the Ardsley fight song, Hail Loyal Sons of Ardsley.
What if somebody calls in and requests it?
You have to give me a lot of beer and then I'll sing it.
All right, well, I'll see what we got lying around.
Well, that's great. So where'd you end up going to college?
So, I love living in what was basically the greater New York megalopolis. Gave me a chance to go into the city a lot. I was an early jazz fanatic and went to the Village to listen to jazz music and blues.
Wow. But who are some folks you saw?
Oh, I went to the Village Gate a lot, and I remember Lionel Hampton was someone I heard a lot. Just a lot of Stan Getz. I mean, really some storied jazz and blues performers. But I was ready for something else, and I went to Colgate University in upstate New York, in actually the geographic center of New York, Hamilton, New York. So I went from quintessential suburban living to the dairy farm capital of New York State in the Shenango Valley, and spent my school years there, some of my graduate school there, and then my first teaching in upstate New York.
That's cool. And what were you studying?
So I was an anthropology major.
That makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. I took to anthropology early on and did some field work in Kingston, Jamaica, outside of Kingston, Jamaica as an undergrad, and then did some field work later on, and we can talk about that later. I went to rural Zimbabwe. But I really got into anthropology and did some really wonderful work with the Oneida Indians. There's an Oneida Indian reservation. It's technically a nation, a territory, an independent territory. But back then, I did tutoring with the Oneida people my junior and senior year of college, and just really loved Hamilton as a city. It's a small community, 3,000 people, with 3,000 students at Colgate. It was a one traffic light town, and a small downtown, a kind of a miniature of Lexington's downtown, and then farm communities all around it. A lot of agricultural vegetable, but Hamilton itself in the area was known for its dairy farming.
So how did you end up from upstate New York down here to Lexington, Kentucky?
Oh, well, easy. I fell in love with the woman of my dreams.
That'll do. That'll happen.
Yeah. A Kentucky native who went to Vassar and then did graduate school at Colgate like I did. She did the same graduate degree. I did a Master's of Arts in Teaching. And we met because after a few years of teaching, I was invited to help out with the first course in the graduate program, which was a methodologies class. I've been doing some quasi-ethnographic work with my students. It was an oral history project, kind of fashioned after Elliot Wigginton's Foxfire. I got to central New York just as small dairy farms were being pushed into agribusiness consolidation, large farms. And my students were the grandsons and daughters of that last generation of real dairy farm, small dairy farm farmers. And while they were still living, I wanted, while their grandparents were still living, I wanted my students to do some work to kind of capture what it was like seeing that transition from small dairy farming to large agribusiness dairy farm production. I actually taught at a school that was reminiscent of what was to come in central Kentucky, in that I taught in the northernmost district of the Appalachian Relief Area, District 1. My joke years later when I got to Kentucky was I taught Kentucky students with a different accent. That's funny. I mean, it was great. It was a school built with Title VI money, so we had not only carpet in the bathrooms, how silly is that, but we had a dark room.
Wow.
So my...
Now, what's a dark room? What is
A photography dark room.
Yeah. Man. Well, believe it or not, people don't know
it's
nowadays.
It's true. Back in the day, pre-digital, when did something, I think it's called film?
Yeah.
What it's called? Yeah.
It's really developed.
Unreliable.
Yes. We did, when I did ectographic black and white slide film, and what I did with my students is divide them into groups of three, two students would be interviewers, and one student would be the photographer. My strategy, which I didn't tell students at the time, was to take the most introverted kids in the class and make them the photographers, knowing that if I forced them to be interviewers, they'd probably run away. So we had groups of three students, two who would be interviewers, with the idea that the technique was the student asking the questions kept eye contact with the person being interviewed. The other person would take notes, so the interviewer could, you know, kind of listen carefully and feed off of what the person was saying, kind of like Chuck Clenny does.
Yeah, you know.
Yeah, really well, I might add. And meanwhile, the other person was taking notes, and then they'd swap. And so we had a script. They really worked really hard on a script so it could be really revealing. And then the third student with a camera would take pictures, and his or her job was then to come back. I'd teach them how to develop black and white slide film, and they made the slides. Meanwhile, the students who had done the transcript would transpose their transcript into something more readable. And then what we finally did was to donate the transcript and the pictures in a nicely boxed set to the library, because the librarian was so keen about the project, she created a shelf called the Local History Shelf.
Cool.
So Sherburne-Irville High School had a shelf devoted to my students' work, and I was really impressed with what they did over a bunch of years. So in some ways, that really juiced me up in terms of how I saw myself as a photographer and an educator teaching photography.
That's pretty awesome. And how are the dairy farms? I never thought I'd ask this, but what's the current state of dairy farms in central New York
State? Interestingly, really good because of something you may eat. You know Chobani yogurt?
Yeah, the yogurt.
Well, the Chobani yogurt guy, emigre from Turkey, as I believe, started his first factory, or at least one of his early factories, in New Berlin, New York. New Berlin is a town about 12 miles from the school where I taught, one of our opponents in athletics.
Yeah.
And he took what was one of the most depressed areas of New York State. In fact, the county in which I taught was the poorest county in New York State, and one of the poorest in the country, a county that rivaled any county in a rivalry that no one wants to be a part of in terms of poverty, in Eastern Kentucky. And he, at its height, I think he was asking people to produce 1 million pounds of milk a week or some phenomenal figure. It's probably not a week. I've got the figures wrong, but
yeah, a lot.
He completely turned around the milk economy, the dairy farm economy of Central New York.
That's incredible.
So, certainly when I was there, I saw lots of depressed, shuttered communities. I would go with my girlfriend, soon to be wife, in the summertime to Saratoga, because the Newport Jazz Festival, after it was kicked out of Newport, went to Saratoga, to SPAC, Performing Arts Center. And as we drove along the old canal route, it was called, it was Route 20, a canal route, a car route that paralleled the old Erie Canal. As we drove along Route 20, we drove through towns that were mostly shuttered. So it was an early version of what was to be the Rust Belt in further west and in upstate New York, devastation of the economy. But it's slowly reviving, even though today there's still pockets of upstate New York that are as depressed as any in Kentucky.
Certainly. And so, Richard, when did you land in Lexington?
So my wife and I, Randolph Hollingsworth, my wife and I married in 1980.
Friend of the show.
Yes,
friend
yes, indeed, yes.
And second connection to Vassar in 2 days, I believe.
Is that right?
Yeah, Tanya, yesterday, she went to Vassar.
How lovely.
Yeah.
They're everywhere.
Yeah. both genders now, so they've just doubled their presence.
Exactly. Randolph and I married in 80, and then in 82 took off for rural Zimbabwe, where we taught for 2 years.
Wow, how was that experience?
Mind-boggling. It was unbelievable. We got there just before the independence anniversary of Zimbabwe. Rhodesia became Rhodesia Zimbabwe in 79 under the tutelage of Bishop Muzarewa. And then in 1980, after the first election, Robert Mugabe became Prime Minister of Independent Zimbabwe. And Kanem Banana became its first president. And we were there the calendar years 82 and 83. We came back with the experiences of a lifetime and our firstborn child, wow. Udo, who was born in the beginning of our second year, January 22nd of 83. And it was two phenomenal years. We taught at a rural school, a former Methodist mission school that had been nationalized as a government school, but still heavily under the influence of the Methodist Church. Mm. And we taught there for 2 years. Randolph was also the choir mistress and did a marvelous job and was an award-winning choir director.
Cool.
I was the tag-along photographer. And we both taught, and we were both the school librarians. We got there just after the library had been rebuilt. It had been bombed during the Civil War years. It was just rebuilt, but there was not a book in the room. Mm. And in a salute to, of all places, the International Book Project.
Nice.
Yes.
Randolph, being a Lexingtonian, back in the day when one had to write something called letters.
Yeah.
Now wrote a letter.
Yeah, in the dark room. Is
yes,
that what you
that's wrote? Right, that's right. Wrote a letter to the International Book Project and said, here we are in rural Zimbabwe at a school. We have no books. Please send books. Mm. And in a shout out to the International Book Project, they
Absolutely.
Sent 36 book bags
wow.
of books.
Wow.
It was extraordinary. And so the headmaster of the school was so impressed that he gave us a budget to complement those books with contemporary African novelists. We were in Zimbabwe when the African Literature Revolution occurred, and Longman, a British book publishing company with deep ties in Africa, was publishing a novel about every 20 minutes
wow.
by an African author. And often, in the case of a lot of Zimbabwe novels, simultaneously in Shona, the native language of the Matabele people, of the Shona people of Zimbabwe, excuse me, and at the same time, an English translation often by the authors. So Charles Mungoshi, for instance, one of my favorite Zimbabwe authors, wrote in Shona and then simultaneously did a English translation.
Wow.
So we bought hundreds of African novels, including Shona novels. And when I think about the impact we had, you know, our teaching was important and I think we did it well, but it was building the library that really leaves me proud.
That's awesome to leave an effect and
yeah.
Shout out to
I'd like to believe yeah.
And that Kentucky connection.
Yeah,
we are very thoughtful, giving people.
Yes, we are. we are. So, we came back after 2 years in Zimbabwe, hadn't seen family. Spent some time with my family in New York. Gave them a chance to hold their grandchild for the first time in 2 years. Well, in 14 months. And then went back to Kentucky ostensibly to see Randolph's family. Discovered that her mother, who had recently divorced Randolph's father, needed our help. I said famously, okay, 2 years south of the Mason-Dixon line. I was an unrepentant New Yorker, determined to go back north.
Mm-hmm.
And instead we stayed because her mom really needed our help. We bought a mother-daughter home. Her mother moved in with us. And I settled into this, at first, uncomfortable life as a Kentuckian. And after a few years, discovered that Lexington was changing. And now in 2017, I may never leave Kentucky, except for Auckland, New Zealand.
Well, yeah. Certainly. Well, I'm so glad you made that decision to, you know, be a Yankee in King Arthur's court.
There we go. Yes.
If you will.
Yes.
But certainly, I mean, I think, Richard, your effect on Lexington and in UK and really just my life as well, you know, has been tremendous. So thank you. Thank you for making that choice to stay.
Well, it was a pleasure. Had I known I would have the pleasure of teaching Chuck Clenny, so I would have been much less reluctant at an early age to stay.
So, you know, Rich, your class was the first class I took at UK. Ever.
And you didn't drop out.
That's true. I stuck with it. And it was a Civic Matters Living Learning Community, the first at UK.
Not really the first, but well, so the first. They were some living learning communities, but frankly, somewhat moribund. They were, you know, forgive me if you're listening and you help run the early communities, but they were not much to brag about. In fact, Mike Nitzel, the first provost at UK after we went from a chancellor provost model, gave me my first assignment, which was help revive these moribund living learning communities. I spent a year researching and going to places I went to a bunch of schools in several states looking at living learning communities that really worked well, and decided that the way to do it was to teach a class that would become the academic anchor for a living learning community on civic engagement. And the class was Civic Matters, the Messy Work of Democracy. And in it was a young punk named Chuck Clenny.
It's true. He's throwing spitwads.
Guy from Northern Kentucky who hailed from, as I recall, a Latin academy.
True. Well, coming to Catholic.
Yes, exactly. And, it was a joy. A teacher should never say it was my favorite class. It was my favorite class. But the students were extraordinary, and Chuck among them.
Well, thank you very much. That's very kind of you to say. And, you know, I think that class taught me so much about how to not only engage in community here in Lexington, but also, you know, some of the issues anthropologically that we face here, being in this weird interstitial space between being too far north to be south and too far south to be north, and the gateway to the south, as I know what some people call us. I like to refer to us as the porridge that's just right. Southern hospitality without the expectation. That's kind of where we're at. So I think it helped me place myself in where Lexington exists kind of in the American story, but also was a great example of what issues other places are facing all around America.
That's right.
Like, I know we talked about Hamtramck, Michigan a lot, and, you know, the Muslim call to prayer there, and kind of the issues of how they were working together to deal with that, not only from a community standpoint, but also from a civic and governmental standpoint. So it was instrumental for me to realize how things get done.
Yes. Well, so the listener has to know this is why it was such a joy to have Chuck in class. But I think the most fun of that class, to my mind, was our dinner book club. You know, the idea hit me that I really wanted to mix it up and not have this be a typical class. Nothing wrong with a typical class, but I wanted to teach something different because it was an anchor for a living learning community. So I deliberately set the class up Tuesday, Thursday, late in the afternoon, got the Res Life people to let us use the private dining room in Blazer, and every third Thursday of the class we had an early dinner together, and it was a chance to do what I call the dinner book club, because we read a wonderful book called Civility, the Manners, Morals, and Ethics of Democracy. Stephen Carter, as I recall, was the author, a Yale Law professor who was really interested in civic life and wrote any number of books. I think his first book was on integrity. This was actually the second book on civility. And it was a great book to use as a prop for a discussion about the civic green, as I called it metaphorically. Brought in a bunch of a clergy, because our theme for the book club was the contested space of religion in public life. The Pew Trust for Religion in the Public Life and a bunch of other places was really exploring this question of how do we understand the civic spaces, community spaces, especially the contested notion of a secular space. And we had a lot of fun.
Yeah.
I think we did.
I think it was awesome. And, you know, for a lot of folks that don't know what living learning community is, you know, basically for this class, we lived with all of the other people in the class. So it was an opportunity where sometimes when you go to a university, if you move here from out of town, you know, you might not know anybody, and it might be hard to just meet your first friend. But in this case, we had a whole base of people that were not only taking that class and we were discussing community, but also they lived in our dorm, so we would see them in the hallway. So even if you were walking around town, walking around campus, you might see them, and at least you know somebody. You start out with a crew. Mm-hmm. So I think that was very helpful for me getting started.
I think so. No, and I tried to, again, accentuate it by holding my office hours Sunday nights from 9 to 11 p.m., though often later. I came home one time at 1 p.m. My wife was about to send the sheriff out for me. And I held my office hours in the lounge of then Keelan Hall as a way of kind of bringing office hours to students. And it was, for me, a really rewarding time. I got to take a peek at the life of a residence hall and at the same time be around for students to come to talk about the class or to talk about what was going on in school. And it was, I think, a much richer experience because I wasn't having office hours at the traditional 10 o'clock Monday, Wednesday, Friday.
Yeah, and it was nice, and it was very convenient for us, you know, to be able to just go downstairs and talk to you. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, so mm-hmm. That's great. Well, so, Rich, maybe let's take a little break here. We'll come back in a little bit. I want to ask you more about Double Take Photography and kind of some interesting photographs you've taken here in Lexington and around the world. In the meantime, since we're having this Have Your Say in May.
Do we have another request?
Fundraiser, we do. Cool. This is a Tribe Called Quest award tour from Sam and Lindsay Williamson, who kicked a shout out earlier and wanted to call and request some Tribe. So nonetheless, thank you very much for requesting that. We'll be right back here in a little bit with Rich Greisman. You're listening to Bluegrass Bios on 93.9 WLXU LPFM. We on a world tour with my man, going to every place to get up in the hand. New York, Angels, MC, Rio, we on a world tour with my man, going to every place to get up in the hand. Oakland, LA, San Fran, St. Paul. It's trying to get right, yeah. Sometimes I can't make myself. Shock and jive. Perfection's on the table. Hey everybody, we're back. You're listening to Bluegrass Bios here on 93.9 WLXU FM Lexington Community Radio, coming to you live from the north side of Lexington, Kentucky. With us in the studio is Rich Greisman. Hey, Rich.
Hey, Chuck.
Hey, thanks again for coming in.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
And, you know, just in case people don't know, right now we have our Have Your Say in May fundraiser. It's ending on the 31st. So if you haven't given yet and you can, please do. The number or the website is gofundme.com/LCRMAY. May. And as always, you can give us a call here at the station, which is what I was initially saying. The number is 859-721-5690 if you have any questions for Rich or if you have a request or just something you want to talk about. Give us a call. But nonetheless, Rich, I want to ask you about Double Take Photography.
Sure.
Which is what you're doing now. I know that you're focusing a lot on downtown Lexington, mm-hmm. correct? Mm-hmm. And so I wanted to ask, you know, since downtown is changing so rapidly, are there a lot of photographs that you've taken that now are of things that don't exist anymore?
Oh, yeah. No, in fact, one of my favorite photographs is the product of a study I did of the... I want to say Hancock Block, but that doesn't quite sound right. I'll remember. But it's a group of, I think, three buildings anchored by what is now the 21C. Mm. And if you go east from the 21C building, the next building over is the Fayette building. Mm-hmm. And at the time, it had this wonderful first-story look. It was a... metal filigree on the first floor, and then second and third floors had these faux red columns, and then a really, really lovely cornice. And I took a picture of, I took a group of pictures, but in particular a study of the Fayette building, the building overall, and then the third floor and cornice. And when the folks at 21C were doing their renovation, they literally took the front face off of the Fayette building, wow. the whole first floor, mm-hmm. just removed it, and discovered that there was a whole other facade, and that the facade that I knew and loved, while interesting, was not original.
It was a facade of a facade.
It was a facade of a facade, not a foe of a foe. So the decision was made to bring it back to an earlier state. And, you know, architecturally, I could hardly argue. I have to say I like what I photographed. Sure. But, you know, what they did is interesting. But it's not there anymore. So I have this photograph of the Fayette building that kind of sits as this relic.
Wow.
This historical image now, because it's no longer the same. The second and third floors are mostly the same. The building color has changed, but it's at least a semblance, but the first floor is entirely different.
Do you think that your approach or your technique of photographing downtown has changed as downtown Lexington has changed?
Well, that's a great question. I don't think so, in that, you know, for me, it's a question of how can I bring to life what I see? How can I photograph in a way that really highlights either the overall gestalt of a building or some particular architectural feature? And I try to do both. And so in some sense, you know, it's what I learned as a, you know, a informal art history student, going to museums and seeing exhibits where you saw studies and a painter did before he or she actually rendered the final version. And, you know, that always intrigued me, to see not just the overall effect of a building in its totality, but also studies that isolate features, especially architectural features. And for me, the interest was always how to up our visual literacy by asking people to look more closely at our architecture.
Right, not just, oh, that's a pretty building.
Right, or walking by it, not seeing it all. You know, I've got a cadre of friends who are at least as devoted as I to downtown. And yet, I could regularly show people photographs, especially of second and third floors, of cornices, where they'd say, is that in Lexington?
Mm-hmm.
In fact, the third floor and cornice of the Fayette building is a photograph I could regularly show someone, and they'd say, where is it? And I'd say, next time you get going west on Main Street, when you get to North Upper, look up. Mm-hmm. Don't just look straight, look up, and you'll see it.
That's awesome. And, yeah. You know, there's really such a smorgasbord of architectural variety in downtown Lexington, of, you know, a lot of the neoclassical Greek Revival stuff,
That's
but
right.
also a lot of historical structures that you know, are totally different.
Yes.
And so I wanted to ask you, Rich, what are kind of some of your favorite buildings downtown?
Oh, gosh.
At least architecturally.
Yeah. So for sure, the Fayette Safety Vault building is one of my favorites.
And where is that?
So it's a building on the row of buildings that is the west boundary of Cheapside Market.
Mm-hmm.
So if you think about the Farmers Market Pavilion, and just west of it is a row of buildings that is the old Cheapside Street. And it's, you know, the north end is bounded by what's now Cheapside Bar. Mm-hmm. The south end is the Lexington City Bank building. And then about a third of the way up from Main Street is a white sandstone building that is just a remarkable building. It's a kind of a mix of Beaux-Arts and Victorian style architecture. It is a architectural marvel, filled with rich architectural features and symbols. There's a fleur-de-lis. There are these, it almost looks like a Masonic tapestry, because it's all that kind of Masonic imagery that the Masons at the time were known to do. And it's an often missed building, and you know, especially now with the pavilion, because you don't always look up, because the pavilion kind of blocks the view. And yet, when my favorite shot of it is a shot that I took from the parking structure on the south side of Main Street. I think it's the parking structure that has that. What is that gym?
It's near Fifth Third.
Yeah, exactly.
I forget what it's called.
Yeah. But
you, Urban Active or
yeah,
something.
Exactly, yeah, exactly. Right. So you can get up and get a nice vantage point, and I have a shot that is a sweep from south, the Lexington City National Bank, north to Cheapside. And I was able to extract from that panorama the Fayette Safety Vault building, play with the architectural orientation of a bit, and then convert it to black and white, give it a little bit of granularity, and pawn it off as a building from Paris, France.
Yeah.
People would look and say, oh, where in Paris is that? And I'd say, yeah, well, it is near Paris, but not Paris, France. It's in Lexington.
It's near Athens, not Greece.
Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, it's just really fun because the commercial architecture downtown, the commercial building architecture, is just stunning.
Mm.
And I wanted to valorize it, especially after the that moment where Lexington gulped, that was the center point debacle. In some ways, the germ of my interest in producing a mobile app, a phone app of downtown Lexington architecture, was sitting at the Kentucky Theater when Progress Lex announced it would there'd be a big rally to talk about what was happening at Center Point. They brought in a bunch of folks from Louisville who talked about why we as Louvillians no longer tear down our architecture.
Mm.
And it was a moment where I thought, sitting there, okay, I'm not a trained architect. I love architecture, but you know, how can I contribute to this conversation about Lexington downtown? And I thought, oh, my photographs.
Mm.
I thought of Carl Raitz, my buddy from UK, who not only is a brilliant cultural and historical geographer, but a really, really wonderful architectural historian, and started a conversation with Carl about, wouldn't it be fun to take our talents and put it together to do an app of downtown Lexington architecture that would get people to stop and look more carefully at the downtown architecture and really celebrate it.
Yeah, and what is the name of that app, and where can people go to get it?
Okay, so it's the long name is, I think, The Inquisitive Walker's Guide to Lexington Downtown Architecture, or Lex Arch Tour, LexArch Tour, TOUR. It is a free app, and I'll tell you why in a second. Either found at the App Store for those with iPhones, or at Google Play for folks who have Android phones. And why is it free, you may ask?
Why is it
free?
There we go. All yeah. right. It is free because the city ponied up the money. Thank you, Mayor Greyer, and thank you, all those city folks. The city ponied up the money to take my work in terms of developing the app itself and push it to those mobile sites.
Yeah.
We had to do coding, and while I could have learned coding because I'm geeky, life is short, I have better things to do, and sure, the city gave us the money to contract with Apex Software,
cool,
Awesome Inc.,
mm-hmm,
and with sound studio,
mm-hmm,
whose name I'm blanking on.
Maybe Dynamics, maybe?
No, Carl Lake Studio. Mm-hmm. Forgive me, Kyle, I'll remember your studio name in just a minute. But with the help of those two groups, we were able to push the work to the mobile app.
That's great. And what area of downtown Lexington does the LexArch app encapsulate?
Okay, well, Carl, being a fellow who never sleeps, has mapped out 35 buildings.
Wow.
What we agreed is to start at an obvious place. We wanted to anchor the app with the old courthouse.
Mm.
So basically, it's the old courthouse in Katowice, its shadow. The footprint goes from the old courthouse north and east to the corner of North Upper and Short, a building called the McLennan Building, home to what was Shorty's, I think
school sushi now.
Right, exactly. Oh, is it? Oh,
it
good.
Is. They
oh,
opened very up cool. this past
oh,
week.
Oh, very yeah. cool. Traditional bank, mm-hmm. a really lovely building. The app would have run south from there down north upper, but when we were doing the app, that area was garrisoned mm-hmm. as the staging ground for the 21C renovation. Yeah. So I'll go west instead. It goes west from the McLennan building across Short to the corner of Mill, mm-hmm. and then down the west side of Cheapside, that row of buildings that we talked about, mm-hmm. from the Cheapside Bar to the Lexington City National Bank. And so it's a lovely mix of buildings. You've got Beaux-Arts architecture. You've got some early modern. You've got Victorian. You've got a real mix of architectural styles that Carl describes exquisitely. And so what we, our idea was to put together an app that spoke to the visual literacy that is architecture. So it's Carl's remarkable narratives on the architectural features of the building, some 13 buildings. He covers all four sides of the old courthouse, which we'll now have to update, mm-hmm. thanks to the wonderful courthouse project that's underway. And then mostly the front facades of the other buildings. We peek around back a few times mm-hmm. to talk about the backside of commercial buildings. But it's mostly the front facades, the things you can see from the street. We do sneak into the lounge of lobbies of several buildings, in particular the lounge of the First Security building. It's not the First Security, Security Trust building, rather, at the corner of Mill and Short. Mm-hmm. It's the home to, among other things, the Pritchard Committee. Yeah. The interior of that building, the lobby, is just stunning. In fact, I've got a photograph of it I really like in the app. But it's Carl's narratives, both text on screen and audio, mm-hmm. with my photographs that act as kind of architectural photographic cues. And it's the narration is so that you can go with your phone and some earbuds and look at the building, listen to Carl's narrative, then look down at the phone to get my pictures. So when Carl talks about a Vossois, I have a picture of a Vossois, so you know what he's talking about.
No, right. That's great. And so this is 1.0, right? And
right. So this is 1.0. 2.0 would be out, except I have a habit of overcommitting, and I'm mm-hmm. way behind. I want to do a shout out to Mike Graves, because Mike Graves agreed to up our game. Carl was a very reluctant voice. He has a sonorous voice. It's a beautiful voice. But, you know, he just didn't want to do the voice. Mm. He did it because he's free.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, certainly.
And I want to say, as a moment of shameless praise to Carl and me, all our work is pro bono. Mm-hmm. Everything mm-hmm. we did was free. The only money we needed was for the coding, and that's where the mayor's office came in. And a shout out again to the mayor's office, to the CIO of the mayor's office, who's just absolutely wonderful, and to the mayor himself for letting it happen. To Lori Houlihan, who was our mm-hmm. wonderful liaison. Lori really put together what happened. And finally, and not least, to Mary Quinn Raymer mm-hmm. of Visit Lex, who helped us with some additional funding and who helped us ongoing help with the promotion. So it was a lovely, lovely collaboration. But Carl had done the voice, but I thought about Mike Graves because Mike is the voice. I routinely to make Mike blush when I see him, especially in public, call him the voice. But Mike's father was the inimitable Chuck Graves, Charles Graves, who was not only a famous architect, but the inaugural dean of architecture of the College of Architecture.
Oh, wow.
When UK in 1964 founded its architecture
school. It all comes full circle.
So Mike did the remake of the narrative for version 1.0 as an homage to his father.
Wow. Cradle to the Graves.
Yes.
That's what we do here.
Oh, I love it. I love it.
That's it. That's awesome. Well, what a great gift you've given to the city.
Well, thank you.
I mean, that's awesome.
It was really fun to do. Version 2 will not only have Chuck's redo of the narration. Sorry, Mike's redo. Like, right?
Rich, are you asking me on air?
Like, version 3 will have Chuck Lenny. Version 2 will have Mike Graves' voice, and it's fantastic. But some extended narrative that Carl wrote based on feedback. In addition to Carl's extended narratives, we have pithy little overviews that are quick stories about the building.
Cool.
In addition, I do some heavy lifting, heavy linking to the Herald Leader, in particular Tom Eblen's wonderful stories. Tom and his colleagues at the Herald Leader have done some great, great stories, kind of living history about the buildings themselves. And what we do in version 2 is link to the Herald Leader archive, so we can have some stories that nicely elaborate on Carl's intentionally focused architectural narratives. Nice. You know, we wanted to deal with the visual literacy. What Tom and others have done is tell stories about buildings.
That's awesome.
So it's going to be a much richer piece. It's extended in that we cover the buildings on North Upper that we couldn't while it was the staging ground for the renovation. And we start going east from North Upper on Main, heading down Main Street. The cigar shop and several other really lovely places.
Downtown Art Center.
Exactly, yeah. Well, that will happen as soon as I get my act together. You know, it's you'll appreciate this. The effort to take photographs, narrative as text, narrative as audio, and put it all together is a interesting technical challenge. I'm using something called Audacity, some free audio software, but it's a steep learning curve for me. And I just have to get in the zone, have a whole lot of beer, and then start redoing the narrative.
Well, that always helps, you know.
Yeah. But, yes, the lubricant, yes.
Yeah, but I think telling the story of Lexington and our architectural history is awesome. And I think through your photography, you're capturing it that moment in time, too, that tells a chronological narrative. I wanted to ask you a little bit more about LexArts as well, because I know you sit on the board for LexArts.
Yes, I do.
What an organization that's really telling the stories of our community. You know, so how was your time working with LexArts? How has that been?
My joke to Nan Plummer, the chief executive officer the other day, was that they're going to have to drag me out of the building if they want to get me off the board. I'm having much too much fun. It's an extraordinary board to begin with. We have remarkable talent, and it really hits all the demographics you want. We have people from the not-for-profit sector. We have university people like myself. We have people from the private sector. We've got business people, bankers. And it's just, one of the things I used to write in my classroom chalkboard, back in the day when we had chalk, and something like film and chalk, date me. But, you know, all of us are smarter than any one of us.
Mm-hmm.
This notion that we bring together a really diverse group of people of diverse backgrounds, intellectual and cultural talents, and say, let's really be smart together. And we are. I sit on the finance committee, and I'm dazzled by the talent we have on the finance committee, because we've got a banker, we've got a tax accountant, a CPA, we've got a tax lawyer, and we have me, the guy who claims to be the village idiot when it comes to fiscal literacy.
I doubt that.
Who sits on that committee just to make sure that what they're saying makes sense for the layperson. But I'm chair of the grants committee, and that's the really fun work. I can tell you a little bit about that if you'd like.
Sure, yeah, and I would love to hear about some events that LexArts has coming
up. Sure. You know, in some sense, the core work that LexArts does is both the arts advocacy to promote the arts of all types and in the Lexington and the greater bluegrass, but it's also the place that acts as an emporium for expertise. We get money from the city and from fundraising. I'll speak more about that in a minute. That goes out to artists, both individual artists, established and up and coming artists, and the iconic organizations of Lexington and the greater bluegrass. So we act as that conduit for lots of grant money. And we also bring an expertise, in particular of Nathan Zamaron, our community arts coordinator, who is just a jewel, who does a lot of the artwork. So when Kroger wants to do a mural project, as they did, Kroger turns to us and says, will you administer that project? When we get money to do our project on the Oliver Lewis Bridge, it's LexArts and Nathan in particular that handles all the management work for that. So, you know, it's got that, broadly speaking, twofold mission of arts advocacy and of giving, of doling out money to artists and arts organizations in a very competitive process every year. And and I'm now chair of the grants committee, and we just finished the big grant application process of the year. We have grant applications about every quarter, but in the spring it's our biggest. We had 35 grant for 35 organizations and artists submit applications for the CAD grants. CAD is an acronym for the Community Artist Development Grants. We have both project grants that give money up to about $2,500 for individual artists as a one-off project, and then 10,000 program grant awards up to $10,000 for a kind of systemic programs that happen over a season. So think of it as a season of a ballet production or the like. And we had 35 applicants. Not all groups got awarded, but there were an extraordinary array of 2 and 3D art, everything from theater to voice to ballet and other dance, photography, traditional art painting and art studio work and sculpture, and it was extraordinary. Music, of course. Both the iconic groups, Lexington Ballet, Kentucky Ballet, the Lyric, all groups like that. Some group called the Lexington Community Radio.
Oh, yeah, I've heard about
applied.
Them.
Yeah, yeah.
Don't trust them.
Exactly. That's what I say. And then, of course, our six what we call general operating service organizations, the six iconic groups that are Lexington Philharmonic, the Carnegie Center, the Lexington Living Arts and Sciences Center, Lexington Children's Theater, the Lexington Youth Orchestra. You know, it's these groups that are the linchpin of what we do. And we do a really rigorous vetting there because we want to keep their game up and learn what they do. And so we have a whole day worth of vetting with them, as well as several days of the community arts development.
Well, it's incredible the work that LexArts does to support local arts here in Lexington and beyond. And, you know, I don't think anybody else can do it like they do. So thank you so much for your work with them, and so much for your work just in general.
Well, can I put a plug?
Please.
Two plugs. So Give Generously stretch to two groups, Lexington Community Radio, because what they do, what Chuck and Ben do, is extraordinary, but also to LexArts. Both organizations are having funding right now, funding campaigns. We are in the last month of the LexArts campaign. Please give by going to the LexArts website. We actually take you to Good Giving as well. Try to stretch and give at the $100 level. You get a LexArts smart card. And, of course, give as well, as much as you can, to Lexington Community Radio.
We really appreciate that. And, you know, it really takes everybody to come together to make this work and to make LexArts work as well. So support your local artists, support your local community, and be like Rich Grisman.
Be like Chuck Glenn?
Yeah.
Don't be like my brother.
Well, Rich, thank you so much for coming in. We had a great time talking with you, learning more about you and all
thank
the great
you.
Things you're doing for our city.
It's a pleasure.
Yeah, we're happy to have you.
And I'm just going to say, to make you blush, I am proud beyond words of what you're doing.
Well, thank you very much. And, you know, I can't do it without the help of everyone else. So I appreciate that.
Thanks for having me.
No problem. Thank you. And nonetheless, we're going to wrap things up here, but Rice-A-Roni University is up next. If you want to check out the show or any of our other shows, you can check us out on LexingtonCommunityRadio.org. Or our shows are on iTunes, so you can find us on there. Please subscribe. And nonetheless, if you can, give to Lexington Community Radio or Lex Arts. Nonetheless, we'll be back next week. This has been Bluegrass Bios with Chuck and Ben and Rich Greisman, and we'll see you next week.